Night gathers, and now my watch begins. It shall not end until my death. I shall take no wife, hold no lands, father no children. I shall wear no crowns and win no glory. I shall live and die at my post. I am the sword in the darkness. I am the watcher on the walls. I am the shield that guards the realms of men. I pledge my life and honor to the Night's Watch for this night and all the nights to come.
Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to do the same with its second edition. Tune in each episode for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to George R.R. Martin, Fantasy Flight Games, Card Game DB, and you, our loyal and new listeners. Check us out at www.whitebookpodcast.com and contact us on Facebook and Twitter or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com. This CC licensed music is Townfish by Spinozar.
Bastard kids in the Moletown brothel count?
Count as...
I will father no children.
Depends on your definition of father. Biologically, they probably count. If you mean actually being there to raise them, there's your out from the oath.
Wow. Night's Watch. Kinda dicks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, they're mostly made up of bastards anyway at this point, right?
Yeah. Bastards, murderers, and rapists.
Yep.
For the watch.
Yeah.
They're the heroes of the story.
Yeah, something like that.
Well, they're kind of anti-heroes, right?
No, I think they're fairly straightforward heroes. They're fighting, like, ice zombies.
Hey, the others might have their own culture and might have, you know, legit reasons for wanting to kill all of humanity. I don't know. We haven't seen anything from their point of view.
Fair. After being on the internet all week, I've got legitimate reasons to want to kill all of humanity, too.
Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair. Well, welcome to the White Book Podcast, episode 219, which I swear is not normally about wiping out all of humanity.
I'm Aaron.
I'm Will.
I'm still Tommy.
Still, Tommy, man, we just can't convince you to be someone else.
Not yet. I'm thinking about it.
Except last week when you were Roy.
Well, the listeners just want him to be Daryl, really.
Yeah, that's fair.
Or any of us.
Really, yeah, really all of us to be Daryl.
Can't argue.
Sorry, go.
I said I can't argue. Everybody should be Daryl.
Yeah. It's amazing his solo podcast doesn't have just like 3,000 listeners at all times.
Yeah, well, the sad thing is he actually quit doing that.
Oh, did he? That's sad.
Yeah, he wrapped that up a couple weeks back.
Daryl, good with the funny, not so good with the follow-through.
Yep.
We miss you, buddy. Like he's listening.
He's definitely not. So, well then, moving on from that Debbie Downer to an entirely different Debbie Downer. We had some FFG news this week that I think is worth bringing up on the cast, and that is not that surprising at this point, news that Call of Cthulhu The LCG was being canceled after the release of this next deluxe box, which should be out anytime now.
So. It's sad, but there were like 6 to 12 competitive players worldwide.
Yeah, I mean, depending on your meaning behind the term competitive, but I do know that their Worlds and Gen Con tournaments had actually been gaining people the last couple years. I mean, sure, they're not drawing, you know, Netrunner numbers or something, but I feel like they'd had somewhere in the mid-20s this last year, which was definitely up for them.
Well, that is a fair amount, considering. If it was growing, then it's very sad.
Yeah,
I've heard great things.
There's got to be multiple reasons why they're doing it, right? Not only is it all going to be driven at the end of the day by profit, but secondly, they have limited people resources right now, and they're adding games. They need to be able to put people on new projects.
Even more than that, I think there's limited, like, audience people resources. We've definitely talked a bit before about LCGs cannibalizing each other, and I mean, if they... It already sometimes feels like they are above the cap for number of LCGs that can really thrive. And if they were just adding more, whoo boy.
So what's the next one to die?
Yeah, Lord of the Rings, right? I was just about to say.
Man, I don't know. It's such a different beast. Everything I hear about it, though, when FFG does mention something about it, is that it sells very well.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I feel like Lord of the Rings is headed for a reboot just like Thrones.
I don't know. There are definitely some things I think, you know, that could be kind of cleaned up and tweaked in it as well. There indeed have been theories from folks that it'll get wound down much like Cthulhu after its last deluxe, because for those not in the know, Lord of the Rings is going through a series of deluxes along with the regular, you know, chapter pack cycles, but these deluxes are walking through the story of the novels.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, so the theory is from some people is that they'll wind the game down after that last box wraps up that story. But, man, I don't know. From everything I hear about it and just kind of the different nature of the player base and kind of their expectations of the game, since it's doesn't have that competitive, like, kind of tournament-driven release mentality, if they, you know, feel the need to shift resources around, I could see it going to the only deluxe model that Cthulhu did for the last few years and really excelling at that.
Well, if you think it's being wound down by these deluxe boxes, though, I mean, I
personally don't, but it is a theory among others.
Right, so if there's a pervasive theory that's potentially what's happening, it just seems like it's just too good of an IP to not be taking more advantage of.
Yeah, that's the tough thing. Cthulhu, while like recognizable and prevalent, if you're already in kind of the nerdy gaming community, doesn't have that like pop culture cred that, let's say, several of their other licenses have. Not all, by any means, but several.
Well, does Lord of the Rings like have that hold on the public right now? There's no more movies for the foreseeable future, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean, we just wrapped up the Hobbit movies, what, last year?
Yeah. I mean, which would mean now's the time to capitalize, not like in 2 years.
So I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know if 6 is going to be like a cap for them or what. Yeah.
Are there 6 now?
I think so, or there will be when L5R comes out to replace Cthulhu. I mean, currently what we've got: Cthulhu, Thrones, Lord of the Rings, Conquest, Star Wars,
and Netrunner.
Yep.
Yeah.
They pushed up to this 6 mark, and then as they've introduced new things, they've cut something else. So, you know, ended Warhammer Invasion and then added Conquest, which I still while Invasion was kind of redundant from a theme perspective, being the third, you know, fantasy LCG, man, mechanically it was better than Conquest.
You just upset some people. We're going to get something about that.
I probably did, but having dabbled a little bit in both, I really don't. Invasion.
Yeah, well, let's hope L5R is good.
Yeah, the real question will be what replaces Star Wars when FFG loses the license.
Why is FFG losing the license?
I know nothing right now, but I do know, you know, from past experience with gaming and watching, you know, the Star Wars license bounce around over the years, it moves around. I assume that these contracts with gaming companies are for a set number of years before, you know, at the time Lucasfilm, now Disney, would decide to reevaluate. But here's the catch. Disney owns Hasbro, which owns Wizards of the Coast.
Oh.
Okay. So I fully expect if this is for licensed out for X number of years, as soon as that time is up, now that Disney owns Lucasfilm, which it didn't when FFG started making the Star Wars products, I assume that Disney will want to move that in-house, so to speak.
While that makes sense, how long are these contracts usually signed for?
Because I don't know. Over the,
like a decade, right?
Yeah, I feel like the times have varied. Decipher had their card game for a number of years. It's been long enough back now that I don't remember how long. Somebody that was...
They had it from around 95, 96, I believe, to 95, pretty sure.
Uh-huh.
And they lost the license in around 2001, I think.
Okay. And then WotC picked it up at the time, of course, well before it was owned through the chain here by the mouse. And they had it for only maybe like 2 years? Something like that? They did that like Young Jedi stuff.
Yeah. No, Young Jedi was Deciphers.
Oh, it was? Okay, my bad. Well, I know WotC had it.
An entirely different game. Yeah. And it was bad. It was a Richard Garfield game that was garbage, which was surprising.
That is surprising.
But it was horrible.
Well, there you have it, guys. Who knows what might happen?
Well, we're pretty sure they have the Thrones license.
Pretty sure they have it, currently, yes. Hopefully it continues to do well for them and 2.0 blows it out of the water so that we don't see it come to its inevitable conclusion anytime soon.
Hey, that might be the cause of the delays. Maybe they don't have the license.
Trying to pull like an Upper Deck on us? Wow, yep. That would be awkward. Okay. Well, I know the main thing that listeners are really itching to get into is the card review, right? Okay, actually, probably not. They're probably itching to hear us weigh in on the recent controversies and back and forth personality clashes in the community, right?
Well, I have definitely not had enough opinions about that.
Yeah, I am sure you haven't. I've definitely heard from more than a few folks on that. Ruminated on it a little bit, made a comment myself, and then, of course, you know, goofed up the reading comprehension since I came back to it to post the next day. So there's that. But otherwise, I think overall, the only thing that I really want to say on the matter is, hey, this is a fun hobby for people. It's great if you want to be competitive. I like being competitive. But, like, there's still other human beings here. I really think that more people, when they're online, need to remember there are other actual people that you're talking to behind those screens. And whether that means you should rethink for a second before you before you post something and maybe rephrase it. Maybe it means you reread the original post before you post. Or maybe it means you just don't be a dickwad for no particular reason. I just feel folks should be decent. And for what it's worth, the arguments that pop up back and forth all the time that such and such, I've heard it about a bunch of different people over the years, is a great person in person. They're just a dick online. No, they're just a dick. Their actions prove that. And it makes me question and worry about what is really going on in real life.
Will, I will jump in and say all the camaraderie in the world in person in no way makes up for all the condescension that you see sometimes from the same people claiming that the community is great because of camaraderie. And it would just be nice to see some consistency.
Everyone's nice people. There's two or three people in the community who I know will talk shit to a stranger in person. And almost none of the people that were involved with this nonsense are those people. So if you're just acting big on the internet, stop. Be an adult.
Yeah. And the thing I just want to clarify is that I don't necessarily want to single out the particular recent controversy. This is the sort of thing that has happened quite a bit over the, good Lord, what is it, like 13 years now that I've been playing the game? I just want to remind people in general, just be decent. Alright, so actual cards then?
Yeah.
Are we supposed to talk about the Game of Thrones card game? Cause
yeah, we're supposed to.
Alright.
Sometimes. No, we get to.
We get to.
So, today is Night's Watch.
Yeah.
We're using A through F scoring.
Yes, indeedy. Again, slight reminder in case you're brand new and stumbling into this. A cards are phenomenal bomb impact cards that change the board state significantly, and Fs should never be in a deck. Again, these ratings are all subjective.
And change over time as new cards are released.
Indeed. All right. I think cool. We decided by drawing straws earlier that Tommy's first.
Yep. Ready to roll. Here we go. We got a 5-strength Benjen Stark with a military and power icon. He is 4 strength, and he is not loyal. He is a ranger trait. Each ranger character you control cannot be bypassed by stealth. He has the interrupt. When Benjen Stark is killed, gain 2 power for your faction, then shuffle him back into your deck instead of placing him in your dead pile.
I really wish they had just given him stealth. I mean, I like that it's each ranger, and that gets better over time.
Yeah.
But for the core set environment, stealth is better.
At a quick glance with what we've seen of the Rangers here and then like preview cards going forward, I feel like in the foreseeable future, Rangers are going to be the trait that I want the most in Night's Watch anyway.
Which is logical. That's the main part of the Night's Watch, right?
The cool part anyway.
Yeah, the part that gets to stab stuff.
Yeah, nobody wants to be a builder.
Ted from How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah, point proven.
Then the other thing you look at is you can kind of imagine some future scenario where you have all of your Night's Watch gaining the ranger trait from something, or all of your Night's Watch gaining X trait from something else.
Yeah,
and cool. At that point, this guy would be amazing.
Yeah. With the power level of stealth being what it is in second edition, that is a great ability. I mean, the question is, though, like, is he worth it, like, otherwise, just, I don't know, cost, strength, icons, that sort of thing. Interrupt that almost encourages you to go ahead and let him die to a military claim or a wildfire or something.
Never feel bad running 3 copies of him, which is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. As long as you don't hit the dupe. I don't know. I almost feel like I go 2, because I never want to actually dupe him. And reserves have me a little wary about just sitting on a dupe in hand to wait and play it after he dies.
Yeah, and Lannister's around, which can just cancel his interrupt and make him be dead.
Yeah, that's also fair.
That's true.
Treachery is so good.
It is.
I don't like him very much right now. I do like him later, but right now I don't think he's great.
Yeah, he's not my favorite of the five casters. I don't know. I'm actually...
He's probably my least favorite of the five casters.
Yeah, I think so too.
I'm actually kind of down on him. I think Aaron's right. He gets a lot better later once you can kind of stack with the Rangers. I'm feeling maybe like a C-minus right now.
Yep, C-minus that becomes a B eventually, I think.
Yeah.
It also hurts a lot that he's not a lord or lady.
Yeah, well, boy, would it be awkward if he was a lady.
I don't see why, but yeah, C-minus is about right.
Yeah, I think those are really fair ratings. Not only the C-minus to start, but the potential to scale.
All right. So send it on to me?
Yeah, it does.
I've got Ghost. He's a 4-cost, 3-strength character with just a military icon. He's not loyal. He's a dire wolf and has no attachments and stealth. And reaction, after Ghost bypasses a character using stealth, that character cannot be declared as a defender for any challenges until the end of the phase. So, go ahead.
But, like, you really want to go second with Night's Watch, so, eh?
Eh, sort of. I mean, I think, well, one, it gets really awesome in melee.
Yes.
To mess with the table, and can be actually a pretty solid deal-making tool if people do not want to be hit by that. But I don't know, I think it makes a decent insurance plan. Like, if your opponent makes you go first, because, you know, they're going to win initiative sometimes, then Ghost lets you go pretty hard on the offense without necessarily having to commit as many characters to those later challenges.
Good point.
Outside of the fact that he's a direwolf, it's just another reason that he's an awesome card to banner for Stark.
Yeah.
I mean, Stark loves this as a card to be able to throw in, because likely you're going to be trying to be getting multiple challenges out of your guys. You're going to be trying to do multiple challenges in the same phase. So being able to lead off with this guy and having another body to throw for, like, Warm Rain, it's a good card.
So I'm going to go C+.
You know, I may be willing to go all the way to B. I really like him personally.
Oh. I was going to give him a B too, so.
Okay, awesome.
I'm up. Jon Snow, who doesn't appear to be loyal. Bastard and Steward. 6 gold, 4 strength. Just an intrigue icon. No attachments but weapon. While Jon Snow is standing, he is considered to be participating in each challenge in which you control an attacking Night's Watch character. He's an A-, who becomes an A.
And he has gorgeous art.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem with him, well, the two biggest problems, one, Milk of the Poppy is absolutely everywhere.
You can't go on him?
Oh, really?
No attachments.
What the hell? I've had him milked like 4 times. I should really learn to read.
Jeez, I love how this is not the first time that you've realized mid-cast that you can't play the game, Aaron.
2.0. 2.0, no one ever said I could.
The rules on attachments in this regard are not different, bro.
Yes, they are. They're totally different. Because people play attachments, so.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess my only real problem with him is he's not a lord.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think he's good. He's still, you know, he's protected from tears. He's protected from milk. He still kind of needs some other Night's Watch to really, really shine. Particularly ones with a better icon spread, but I dig that Ghost and Jon Snow kind of give Night's Watch the offensive punch.
Is there any way to keep him standing or to restand him?
Not that I can think of out of the core set.
Well, okay, the plot.
We may wind up seeing something. Oh, yes.
Wait, yeah.
Power Behind the Throne. Yep.
Mm-hmm. But that's really it, right?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, enough small minors that it's an A- that gets higher as the game goes on.
Yeah.
Now, how do you guys like him relative to the other 6 costers?
Pretty well, I think.
He's not as good as Tyrion. He's probably not as good as Jon Snow.
Tyrion's a 5.
Tyrion's a 5, so he's about as good as Jaime.
Yeah. I think that he's kind of comparable in being able to be used in multiple challenges. So.
Yeah. Jaime, Drogo, Doran.
Better than Doran.
Oh, for sure.
Rob, who's better than him.
Yeah.
So he's about on par with the others.
Yeah. I think the 6-cost slot wound up being a really solid slot for the most part.
And Doran.
Now, how about him relative to Baylan? I think I like Baylan better.
Yeah, for now.
In the core environment.
in the core environment.
I think Jon Snow gets better than Balon, though.
Like, I think with Jon Snow, you can just keep a couple weenies standing, like, eventually, and be fine, as long as you run high initiative. But I don't know if Balon stays quite as good as he is now.
Yep, that was my thought as well. Yeah. I like B plus A minus for now.
I don't know. I think I'm willing to go ahead and give him an A minus myself. Yeah, I'll come down on that side of the fence. Somewhat wishy-washily by still giving him a minus, but oh well.
Cool. So then that brings it back around to me, I think.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another unique character, Night's Watch character, 3 cost, intrigue icon, 2 strength, Maester Aemon. He is a maester and a steward. He has no loyalty, no attachments. Interrupt when a Night's Watch character would be killed, kneel Maester Aemon to save it.
A.
Yeah. I think in the 2.0 environment right now, that ability, I mean, at 2 cost, it was already still pretty playable in first ed. In second ed, only bumping it up by 1 gold, eating claim for all this stuff, like that advantage adds up even faster, I think.
Still treachery bait, since that was a drawback on Benjen, right?
That's true.
It's not a unique Night's Watch character. He can save himself. He can, like, if you're worried about cancels, he can just save, like, the steward at the wall 5 times, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, I suppose that's the thing. Like, something like, well, Benjen in this prior example, if he doesn't get canceled, like, you use him once, you shuffle him in, maybe you draw another copy, maybe you don't, or, you know, any other, like, dupe save. It's a almost one-shot effect over the course of the game, but Aemon here is turn after turn after turn. So, like, if it's a turn or two before they've got the treachery, like, you're still up.
Yep.
A.
I don't know what else there is to say. He's great. Definitely A.
Yeah. I don't know either.
Will, ready?
I think I'm willing to go that way. He's actually even better than he used to be, not only for the previously stated reasons, but he has an icon now.
Icon.
Yeah, he can make a challenge if you really need it.
So he's basically the Targ version.
Yeah, without the
pretty much
silly
yeah.
Seasonal drawback.
Yep. All right. Will.
Okay. Sends us on to Old Bear Mormont. This is our big old 7 coster. He has military and power icons. 6 strength. He is indeed loyal. He's a commander and a lord. And while you control the wall, Old Bear Mormont does not kneel when declared as a defender. Interrupt. When the challenges phase ends, if you have not lost a challenge as the defending player this phase, put a Night's Watch character into play from your hand.
I hate him so much. He's the biggest trap card in the core set.
He's maybe not my least favorite of the 7 costers.
Who is?
But, you know, I think I'm still down on the Red Viper, actually.
Yeah, Viper's so much better than this.
Yeah.
At least Viper can't be put to the sword. Tears of List.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But you're also not getting, like, any sort of action advantage out of the Red Viper. Now, I mean, you have to get some work done to get there and have the wall.
I mean, that's an 11 gold combo.
Like, yeah, you're probably not playing on one turn.
I know, but still, like, it's an action advantage, but it's an action advantage that's taking, like, 2 full turns.
Yeah.
Of not playing other stuff to, like, get going.
Yeah. I mean, it's not great, but I do at least see the seeds there of what has kind of been my kind of shorthand criteria for what I'm looking for in a 7 coster. Like, he at least has the capability to do that.
If they gave him renown, I think he was at least playable, but I don't think he's playable.
Maybe if they get an event to search out the wall or something.
He's just a body. Like, he's a 7/6, functionally a body.
Yeah. And at 7 costs, that is not what you want most of the time.
Yeah.
Like, if you haven't lost a challenge as the defender, like, let's be realistic. You're probably going to lose a challenge as the defender. A challenge?
A challenge. Yep. Not unopposed, like the wall itself. Lose at all.
Can't stand him.
It's pretty rough.
I'm giving him an F.
Ooh. Yeah, I really don't feel like I go that far on him.
I know you don't.
Yeah, I'm definitely not giving him F.
Like, I think he's an F.
Like D+, maybe.
That's exactly what I was going to give him.
No.
F is just way too extreme.
He may be good.
He can be played.
Yeah, but he's a card that should under no circumstances be played in the core set. Eventually, he might earn a D+ if we get ways to play him for cheaper, and we get ways like to get the cheat find or cheat the wall into play, but for now, no.
I don't know. If I was hell-bent on playing Night's Watch in the core environment, which I'm definitely not doing, I might play one copy of him anyway, just on the off chance that I get him out there with the wall.
Oh, boy.
Because I'm probably playing multiple copies of the wall.
I mean, I might, but, like, I'd feel really bad about myself the whole time.
Oh, I wouldn't feel good about it, but I'm saying he's a D+ for that very reason, that he's a card that I might play one copy of.
Yeah, in the core set, there's, like, three cards that I might not play. You know what I mean?
Exactly my point. That's why he's a D+.
It's
a card you don't want to be playing, but you might have to in a pinch.
I think I'd probably just not run him and use that as an excuse not to run Noble Cause and stuff.
I'd probably just not play Night's Watch, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Although Greg...
If I was trying to win anything...
It's okay, Greg's going to win Worlds with him, so...
I mean...
We're all going to feel stupid.
There you go.
Yeah, if Greg's... He's sitting there, challenge accepted.
I mean, that'll have to be next year, though? So it's technically not Worlds this year?
It's at Worlds, so it's Worlds.
The tournament that is at Worlds.
Yes.
Or what is it being called? The War of the Five Kings tournament?
Yes.
So I'm going to call it Worlds, because it's at Worlds.
And what the shit difference does it make, because you're not going.
Yeah. Have fun, guys. All right.
Well, there you go, then.
Samuel Tarly, Loyal, 2-for-1, Intrigue, Steward, Insight, +1, Reserve. I want to like him more than I do. I like him, but I don't love him. Really wish they'd given him at least, like, 2 or 3 strength.
Or another icon. I think that's part of what makes me like Picel better than him. I'm not down on him, really.
No.
Like, as a 2-drop, this is pretty fantastic, but I don't know...
Fantastic.
I mean, as a 2-drop?
You get a lot.
There's some good 2-drops.
Yeah, but, like, are you so crowded for space right now that you're not like, yeah, Samuel Tarly is, like, the first card I grab?
I'm running him. Love him. Like, Night's Watch has trouble winning Intrigue.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of why I would rather have the extra icon.
Yeah. But
I'm not sure I'm sold on that plus reserve, though we have at least seen there's cards coming this set for Night's Watch that will interact with whatever your reserve count is. So that's
I think there's going to be some synergy coming in that regard for Night's Watch.
Yeah.
Not just in this set, but like it down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he draws B minus, potential to go higher.
I think he'll still be, like, until there's a different version of Sam printed that's somehow better, I still think he's going to be go-to for Night's Watch. I'm going to give him an A-.
Wow.
Even if I'm not in love with him, like, he's draw, like, I just
think there's better draw in Night's Watch.
He's going to be an auto-include, I think, at least in 1X.
Yeah, sure, but one time of a card isn't an A. Like, for now, everything's a 1 of.
I'm probably going to give him a B, but I agree with Will. He's probably going to be a 1X for a good long while.
Okay. Sends that back around to Tommy, then.
Yep, back to me. We have unique Sir Waymor Royce. He is a 3-cost military power icon. 3 strength, he is not loyal. He is a knight and a ranger. No attachments except weapon. He has the interrupt. When Sir Waymor Royce is killed, discard 1 card at random from each opponent's hand.
He's pretty good.
I think he's great value.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah.
Like, Benjin is 2 more gold for 1 more strength, and I don't think Benjin is significantly better.
I mean, we essentially saw this exact card as Jacelyn Bywater for Lannister in First Ed, and, well, it never blew anyone's socks off, like...
Yeah, played for a good long time.
Yeah, it was a reasonable one of for a long time. Pretty sure it was in Matt Lay's Worlds winning Lanny deck years ago. Like, favorable traits on him. I mean, and the stat line actually is better in Second Ed than that was in First, where it was just kind of acceptable. Yeah, I like him as a 1X quite a bit.
I think he's a solid B card.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yep, exactly what I'm saying.
All right, to me then?
Yep.
Yorin. Yep. Now this card I love. Not only because the art looks a lot better here in Second Ed than it did in First, even though it's the same art. This is a 3-cost, 2-strength character with just an intrigue icon. He is loyal. He has the bizarrely named Wandering Crow trait and reaction after you marshal Yoren. Choose a character with printing cost 3 or lower in an opponent's discard pile and put it into play under your control. I already love recursion effects. Getting 2 bodies out of 1 effect like this is pretty freaking sweet. Sure, he can be canceled. Like, treachery is just kind of a flat drawback to most everything at this point. But I like it, and this is the kind of ability that only gets much, much better as the game goes on.
Excellent with Marched, excellent with Varus.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Could end up being pretty fun with Ariane, too.
I wish he had one of the traits.
Yeah. It is kind of funny or weird to see him as a wandering crow and not have any of the regular traits. See, he would be a steward by the icon, right?
Yeah.
For whatever weird reason, they didn't want that that particular synergy. I don't know why.
Does it become the storyteller of Second Ed, or is there going to be another wandering crow?
I don't know if there's another wandering crow.
There's none that I'm aware of as far as like named characters. They may very well, you know,
recruiter for the watch. Weeks,
but
yeah, you could have like a recruiter for the watch be a wandering crow.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, what I was saying before about Ariane Martel though is for some reason I don't know why, but I just kind of get the feeling that doing Night's Watch with the banner to Martel is eventually going to be a thing. And if you're able to have her out there, get a challenge out of her, and then drop Yoren in. And nope. Put in another body.
Nope, after you marshal Yoren.
It's marshal, not come into play effect.
Now who can't read the cards? Bam.
Yep. That is brutal.
Yeah.
I gotta pay much better attention.
They know our silly tricks.
They sure do. Nonsense.
Yeah. We could recruitment him. We could march him in recruitment like 2 or 3 times, right?
Yep. Damn.
Yeah. So close, yet so far away.
I like him a lot less now.
I still think he's a B-. A fun B-, but a B-.
Man, I don't know. I think I'm probably willing to give him a solid B. Like I said, I think he will just get better and better as his available targets increase in quality as the game goes.
Yeah, even without stupid Martel shenanigans, it's a B card on its own for the way that it's intended to be used. It's a B.
Hey.
On to the next one. I think you get one you're excited about, Aaron.
Yeah, I get my third card, my third, like, house-defining card. Messenger Raven. It's a loyal card. It's a 1-drop with 1 strength and no icons. It's a raven with no attachments, although you could technically attach a letter to him. Dominance action. Return Messenger Raven to your hand to draw 1 card. Hell yeah.
This
card is 3-of forever.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine a Night's Watch deck not running 3-of.
It's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
There's nothing bad you can say about it. It's an A. It can probably be done there.
Why doesn't it have icons?
I can think of something. I mean, reserve, I think, is potentially a very real thing here with this level of draw available for them, and your hand size going up by 2 when you trigger this. Like,
you need to choose when you use it.
Right, and
it's
right.
1-drop, so like...
I'm just saying you'll need to do some management. It's not impossible. I'm not saying it's terrible, but it is a consideration.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, kind of helps rein in its power a little bit. I mean, it is a very strong card for Second Ed, but it's not like it's a 1-drop, you know, Toman from First Edition that you just trigger every turn mindlessly.
He's better than Toman. Really? I said it.
No. Yeah. No, he's not.
I don't think he's better than Toman.
Because Stannis and Mad King and 15 other kings were shutting Toman off.
Messenger, but Toman shuts them off, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't shut down Mad King.
Okay, not Mad King.
Shuts down Stannis, though.
I don't know. So. I think a 1 in 2nd edition is better than a 1 in 1st edition. I think it means more. There's very few 1-drops, period.
Yeah,
little 1-drops of this quality.
Playable card, yeah. I mean, and it would still be a playable card in First Ed. Like, I definitely agree this is an A card, for sure.
All right. Anyone not have it at an A? Tommy?
No, it's an A.
Okay.
Yep.
You're up.
Yep, back to me. We've got 2-cost military icon, 1-strength Old Forest Hunter. This one is loyal. It is a ranger, no attachments except weapon, and action, discard one card from your hand to gain one gold. Limit once per phase.
And there's your problem with reserve taken care of.
There you go. If you really don't need the card in your hand and have a way to actually use that gold.
There's dominance actions for gold,
dominance.
Right?
Yeah. 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 I mean, and Night's Watch has an event, for instance, that they want to play. I mean, I do like this card.
I like this card more than the zero drop reducers.
Really?
Yep. Mm. I wish. Yeah. I'm really sick of everything in Night's Watch having next to no strength, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you just keep throwing stuff at them till they kneel out.
I mean, I
then they can't attack you back.
But now you want to go first as opposed to, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. Just go aggro with them, give up on the wall.
I just think that's the only way to play them, but I don't think they're good either way.
Yeah, if you're going to play them competitively, I agree with you, Aaron, but I don't know. I don't think that it's going to be a T1 deck for a while to play Night's Watch.
I also don't think this card needs a limit once per phase.
Like from a power
not
level
yet.
Standpoint, probably not, but I'm certain that they were hedging their bets for unintended consequences.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's still a pretty solid card. Any extra income of basically any kind is at least a C in second ed, and he's not limited, so he's maybe like a C plus.
I think he's a B minus, but I also think he's a valuable bluff card.
No,
yeah.
Here's another thing to think about why they might have balanced this with the limit once per phase. So pre-marshalling, your potential to do this, you'd be able to. Or to be able to use the gold during marshalling, you'd be able to do this three times, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So,
or in taxation,
plot,
in
draw,
and then in marshalling itself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, taxation, you'd be able to do it then. So, mm-hmm. huh. Because
exactly.
I was thinking about is limiting the amount that you could just dump your hand with this guy to load up on gold and drop down some huge guys on turn two or something.
Yeah, I mean, you can already do that, basically.
Depending on your plot choices and all that stuff, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, even with the 3-gold plot, you can play the 7-cost guys, right? 3 plus 4 is 7.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying that you can't. I'm just thinking about if that was something that potentially went into.
Yeah, probably.
Because they've seemed so concerned with curbing resource acceleration right now.
That's because of Valar, right? Like, were you on the cast when we discussed that?
Yep.
Yeah. Like, they have to, because otherwise, without Valar, everything becomes how much can you shit out cards.
Yep, it's a runaway train.
It's okay. We'll get our big explodey plot sometime soon, I hope.
I know. I like this guy a little bit, though.
I think he's good.
Yeah,
I think he remains good.
Yeah.
Like, if I have two cards in hand and him in play and an Intrigue Icon standing, you have to assume Tears of Lys, right? and now you have to block my Samwell. You can't just blow it off.
Mm-hmm.
It's relatively useful.
I agree. So does that send us on to the next one?
Yep.
All right. Did we rate him?
I gave him a C plus. Aaron gave him a B minus. Did you rate him? Maybe not.
I'm going to give him a B minus also.
Okay. There you go.
So this is you, Will?
Yep. And I actually kind of like this one. Nice and straightforward. 4 cost, 5 strength, military and power icons. This is the ranging party. He's not loyal. He's an army and a ranger and has no attachments except weapon. Pretty vanilla, but splashable. Like, one of the only cards we've seen at this kind of like cost to strength and icon efficiency. We know the army trait is good. We know the ranger trait. Like, it can't be hit well by Milk of the Poppy, though, of course. No one's going to want to blank that text box, but it protects itself from future negative attachments. Like, I really like this for, you know, as vanilla of a card as it is.
It's the only Night's Watch character right now with a good strength to cost ratio.
Yeah. I think it's my favorite of those 4-cost army type characters.
Yeah, for 2.0, this guy's unbelievably efficient.
I don't know if he's my favorite. I really like the Martell one a lot.
I do. It's the Martell one's probably my second favorite.
Agreed.
I think he's a solid B. And yeah.
I think so.
It's what he is.
It's hard to say much more about him since he doesn't have much more text, but at this point in the game, that efficiency is worth it.
I mean, he's also a really good body to pair with Benjin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, to get the most out of that anti-stealth ability, you need more icons, right?
Right. Well, both Weimar and ranging party have 2 icons, so they can effectively defend.
For sure.
It'd be nice if something like that had intrigue, so they don't just get tears, but c'est la vie.
Next card has an intrigue icon.
This me?
Yep.
Steward at the Wall. It's your standard one-cross reducer. This one obviously reduces Night's Watch cards. Ally and Steward. But Steward means it doesn't have a power icon. It has an intrigue icon.
And I like that. I may even like that a little better than I like the other one-cost reducers. And they're A cards.
So, A also. Maybe a plus.
Yep, no doubt.
Yeah, man. Hard for me to go on full-on A-plus with him, but he's really good and will stay that way.
Yep. So that's back to me.
Yep.
We have got a three-cost power icon for strength veteran builder. With the builder trait, he is not loyal, no attachments except weapon, and action, sacrifice veteran builder to choose and stand a location.
Just there if you want to build the wall deck, right?
Yeah.
This card's hard to rate because he's not loyal and he can stand any location.
Right. And he does have higher strength and cost.
Like, he could end up being a linchpin to some sort of combo-y deck in the future.
Yeah. It's easy to see.
Yeah. Then I don't know if there's anything there that quite does it now. I mean, obviously, he's there for the wall, but I don't know that the wall deck is there.
You can sacrifice him and Yorn brings him back?
Has to be from an opponent's. Doesn't Yorn?
You are bad. Right,
I'm done talking about Yorn. I hate that guy.
Tommy's revising his rating down.
All of the potential uses for him not working for me.
He's still good. He's just not great now. And, like, even if your only use for him is to stand your King's Road after Greyjoy has knelt it, that's still a valid use. You'd rather not. But, I don't know. Like, even in first edition, what would you be using him to stand? The Scourge?
Yeah.
Iron Throne.
Essentially, yeah.
Maybe Iron Throne, but probably not, because you'd have to know you're going to need that, you know? Extra character cancel. Yeah, Black Cells, maybe.
And I always want my Iron Throne standing, Aaron.
There's no character triggers on the board, but Iron Throne should be standing.
Long Lances is still a thing, buddy.
Never know when you might need it.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I give him a C. And, eventually some card will make him an A, but for now he's a C.
I think I'll start him at a C+, and say that he's got good potential, depending.
Man, I don't know that he's going in a lot of stuff at the moment. I'm feeling like a C-. The acknowledgement that on down the line, there will probably be some kind of combo that needs to use him.
Is this me? No.
It's Will.
Oh, boy, it got back to me so quickly. Gosh, how in the world did it manage to do that? We get to move on to their attachment. This is Longclaw. 2-cost, non-loyal, Valyrian steel and weapon, Night's Watch character only, and attached character gets +1 strength and gains renown.
Some of my favorite art in the set.
Looks pretty sharp. And I'm dropping that on John sure looks tasty, doesn't it?
It's also pretty good on the card I failed, Old Bear.
Oh, yeah.
There's that renown you wanted.
Yeah, but then again, now you're spending 13 gold to make him playable. So, you know, that. It's still really good, and I'd run at least 2.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This is, I think, one of my favorite of the weapons, that renown. I mean, there's honestly not a lot of renown floating around in the core set. That acceleration is pretty decent.
I mean, on Jon Snow, it's fantastic, except your only real problem is that Neil is, like, every second deck.
Yeah, there is that.
But still, if you can keep him standing, adding, 5 strength, if assuming Long Claws on him, with renown to every challenge means you're going to win some challenges.
Okay, that's fine. On to the next card, then? Or did we actually
rate that? We should totally rate Long Claw. I'm going to give it a B. Renown, good. Renown on Jon Snow, great.
Yeah. I think it's worth it as a B. Like I said, it's one of my favorites of the weapon attachments.
I think I'd give it a B+, just because, like you said, the renown is so huge.
It returning to hand so often is really big, too.
Yep.
Like, you can just stick it on somebody for the time being. Someone like Benjin, who you don't mind if he dies.
There you go.
Alright. Next card, I think, is, God, maybe the only reason to ally into Night's Watch, or to banner into Night's Watch. Castle Black. 2 gold, location, the north, action. Neil Castle Black to choose and stand a Night's Watch character. Until the end of the challenge, that character gets +2 strength. So it is functionally Frozen Outpost from first edition, except loyal.
Unique.
Sorry, unique, not loyal. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah. And I think that still makes it a pretty good card. I mean, Frozen Outpost stayed pretty respectable throughout the life of First Ed, right?
I mean, it was great with Longship Maidensbane.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a great card. It's going to stay a great card. Like, it's hard to see not at least one of in Night's Watch functionally forever. Like, there's very little downside to running this.
Yeah, two cost. I mean, come on.
It's like two cost in second edition. It was two cost in first, and it was still really good.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I agree for essentially the same reasons. That cost is going to be an even better price point this time around.
And this time, they were smart enough to make it a defending Night's Watch character, not just any defending character.
Right.
That is good. They've tried to really close off a lot of those corner cases this time around.
The corner cases that would inevitably break the game.
Right.
Maybe we'll be able to get away without a restricted list.
We'll see. They'll definitely try to keep away from that as long as possible, I think.
I think Star Wars has a restricted list, right?
Theirs is different, though, because it's the objective set, deck building and stuff.
Right, but Night's Watch, I don't know where that came from. Netrunner doesn't have a restricted list, correct?
I believe so.
So, I mean, they can make a game that's actually balanced.
So what are you going to rate this thing, Aaron?
B+.
Will?
Yeah, no, I hate to just be so agreeable on almost everything this time around. I guess you rate cards with people for too long, and everybody just winds up with nearly the same criteria. I think B+ is a really, really solid spot for it.
Yep, we are around the horn. B+ takes us back to me, and I think we've got The Wall, which is a 4-cost unique location. It is not loyal. It is a Stronghold and the North trait. Each Night's Watch character you control gains +1 strength, forced reaction, after you lose an unopposed challenge, kneel the wall. Interrupt. When the challenge phase ends, kneel the wall to gain 2 power for your faction.
It's a trap now, but it's going to be incredible later.
I sure hope so.
Like, yeah, I think it's cost inhibitive right now.
Yeah, if it were just 3 gold, I'd be much happier with it.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I can't say that 4 is better than 3, but for this like level of steady effect in second ed, like, I'm not sure that 4 isn't correct.
Only got 1 steady effect. And functionally, I'd rather have 2 cards than 2 power most of the time.
Yeah, yeah. Those
are 2 gold, aren't they?
That's fair.
No, they're 3.
Nah, the draw locations basically are 3. Okay.
So say this was 3 gold in first edition. Would you play it?
No.
Me either.
I mean, no. Just, what, like, not even a little bit. No, with all the
even if you could House of Dreams it, would you do it?
No, not even with all the, like, tricons and the cheap effects and,
really?
Like, no.
Dang.
No.
It's just not worth it right now. I just don't see it.
If it were 2 gold, you play it in first edition. Maybe. But even then, not
as House of Dreams.
No, but, yeah, well, not even, like, just would you put it in your deck? Probably not. You have to build around this card.
You do. You do indeed.
The +1 strength is really nice, but it's not really nice because it's so great. It's really nice because Night's Watch really needs it.
Yes, and I mean, that's fairly obviously, I think, why so many of them have that low strength to kind of push you into going ahead and playing the wall.
When they reprint House of Dreams, maybe it'll be a Night's Watch only agenda.
That would make no sense whatsoever from Nedley's perspective.
Well, call it something else, because that's the only way I really see this becoming a big deal. It's going to be good. It's going to be good with the plot that comes out in the first chapter pack, I think it is. For the Watch? No. For the Watch is the plot. You cannot lose, and your opponent cannot win the first challenge initiative against you each phase.
Oh, my bad.
Right.
Yeah.
But like, that'll make it really good, because then, you know.
It's not limit 1 per plot deck? You can play 2 of them?
Yeah, it's plot deck limit 1. All of, yeah. What?
Do you remember what the stat line was on it?
I'm looking at it. 4-6-1 with a 6 reserve.
Still not a deck I want to build, but I think it definitely opens the potential for this card up.
Yeah. I mean, it's 1 turn, and you have to, like, find the wall first. And we don't really have anything that reduces. I mean, that's when you're going to discard 4 cards for your Old Forest Hunter, right?
Depending on what those cards are, maybe.
Yeah. But then you don't have anything to play in order to in order to actually win the other two challenges.
That's why you've got all these cheap characters at a Night's Watch. You know, so you can go ahead and play your Ravens or whatever.
I mean, is all of this sacrificing really worth it for two power?
Probably not. Probably not.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a C, C minus.
I think I feel good at a C.
Right now, I'm going to say C minus with potential for it to get better.
All right. Will?
There we go. Let's see. That's going to send us on to Meager Contribution. This is a zero-cost loyal event and has the text reaction. After an opponent collects income, move one gold from that player's gold pool to your own. Max, one per round.
I wish that didn't have the max one per round.
Yeah. I'm kind of back and forth on it. I used to not really like it, but, you know, the more I've kind of thought about it, you know, the more that one gold really throws off a game plan a lot more than it did in first edition.
Yeah, it's annoying.
You're trading a card for a one-shot one gold or a two-gold swing. It's okay. Like, I usually just rather have another card.
It's not, you know, like, fantastic. But I'm not going to lie, I need to get around to doing it, but I have been kind of wanting to try and build the best imitation of a choke deck that you can attempt in second edition with these and Treachery and Naval Blockade.
And Veteran Builder.
Veteran Builder?
Yep. Oh, wait, no, sorry, the Greyjoy one.
Oh, well, I couldn't go three house.
That's so, a problem.
Yeah, you'd have to make a choice there, which of the two that you want to do. You know,
the Greyjoy one is better than a Meager Contribution.
Maybe it.
Kings Road.
If you're first player and can act to kneel it first.
Well, when they play it the first time, assuming you have the card out.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, and then they're out a gold and said.
Right.
Well, the other thing I'll say about this card, though, is that it almost seems like a tool to help you stall to get set up, right? So if you are going to try and do the wall shenanigans, you're going to need to buy some time where you're not just getting blown out by a deck that wants to be aggro. And this is going to help you throw off that tempo.
Am I nuts, or more than almost anything else, does the Night's Watch need Valar?
Very possibly.
Like, in they're a lot stalling of ways with no way to really come back.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, they feel the most like a first ed faction, like in their curve and stuff, with these reserve effects. They want to be able to sit on that in hand and whatnot. Yeah, they would love Valor. So, I don't know, what kind of rating does Meager Contribution get from me? Probably just like a C. It's not what I look to first, but I am kind of coming around on it being better than I thought.
C minus.
Now I'll split the difference and give it a C+.
Well, there you go.
That's not the difference between C and C-.
Look at us being different.
Oh, I thought you said B-. I'm sorry.
No. Like, that is definitely not the difference. All right.
On the home stretch, two left.
Am I Take the Black?
Yep.
Take the Black is a loyal event. 3 gold. Most expensive event in the game, I believe. Dominance action. Choose a non-unique character with a prison strength of 6 or lower. Take control of that character.
Damn. Yeah. How's that for a just wow Shaga effect?
So, I think my favorite bit of that is if you have 3 gold left just because you couldn't play anything, and your opponent has a choice between killing 2 cards, and one is loyal and one is non-loyal, but the non-loyal is really good, they're probably going to kill the non-loyal, assuming you're going to steal it. Did that make sense?
Did you mean unique instead of loyal?
I totally keep saying unique and loyal wrong, which is ridiculous, but yeah. Yes. Unique and non-unique, they will kill the non-unique even if it's better if you have 3 gold left.
Most of the time. Yeah, the hunter is where this is really nice. You sit there on 2 gold, threaten the, like, put to the sword during challenges or whatever, and then ditch a card to get a gold in dominance so you can play this.
I mean, in dominance, you pop a messenger raven back to hand. You know? Combo.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, I like this. It's a very powerful effect. Sitting through to Dom does still kind of suck, and has actually, I think, the potential to suck a little bit more in second edition. Even with Intrigue being kind of devalued, the total number of cards in hand is also down. So, like, odds, I think, go up that this gets pulled.
Yeah, odds. I mean, Night's Watch has some of the best draw in the game right now. I guess not. They have the same two cards that a lot of houses have. You could technically get a few Messenger Ravens out and get a bunch of extra cards and Dominance, though.
There you go.
Like, if you had two or three Messenger Ravens, you could refill your hand every Dominance, be back at six cards.
Yeah, very quickly.
That's from an empty hand. Yep. And you could always use a Messenger Raven and accidentally draw in to take the black, which is entertaining.
I mean, if you've got the gold left. Like, if right. I was not planning on sitting on three gold, I don't know that I have that.
I mean, I play mostly Lannister, so I randomly just have gold sitting around. Yeah. Like, if you were saving two for Pips of the Sword, just happened to have an old Forest Hunter out, it's not unlikely.
Yeah, I mean, well, that was kind of the dream play I was mentioning earlier. You bluff that through challenges, and then slam this on them with the Hunter discard.
After you drew it from Messenger Raven, even better.
Bam! So
couldn't have been intrigued away.
There you go.
There's lots of little dreams with this card. It's a really good Shaga card, you're right.
Yeah, that's my biggest thing. Like, I'm honestly not sold because it's that dominance action that is there for, like, a pure Jamie perspective. But this is the biggest, like, wow Shaga card maybe in the entire core set. So I really dig that.
So it's the same price point as Mel's Favor, but it's permanent. And the only limitation is non-uniques.
Imprinted cost six or lower.
Okay.
We don't have any uniques that are that expensive yet, and non-uniques that are that expensive yet anyway.
Right.
I think it's an A-.
I don't know if I'm willing to go that high. The dominance, I think, keeps it in the B range for me. Maybe a B+, but...
I think as the game goes on, you're going to feel silly about that.
Maybe. Maybe I'll move on to underrating events instead of locations in second ed.
Well, and that considered as well, it's unlikely that anybody's hands judgmenting this.
Yeah.
Yes, very, very much so.
I'm going to give it a B+.
All right. Last
one. Back to me.
Yep.
So we've got another event. It is one cost, the Sword in the Darkness. It is not loyal. Play only during a challenge in which you control a participating Night's Watch character. Reaction. After you win a challenge by 5 or more strength as the defending player, the losing opponent cannot initiate challenges against you this round.
Man, once we get our Night's Watch only House of Dreams, this card's going to be nuts.
Once you do.
It changes the way the game has to be played by opponents.
Yeah.
You can't chump challenge early.
No, not at all. Or at least it changes the order of stuff. You can probably chump challenge the intrigue. Maybe that's still the right direction to go, but as far as the way the Night's Watch icon pool is right now, I don't know that they're winning that by 5 on defense, even if you're just throwing a moneylender at them.
I mean, you would have to have Old Bear with a, what's that, Little Bird?
Yeah.
Which, since I'm not running Old Bear.
Combination of other stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, like a massive I mean, if you're bannered to something, good. You could just have, like, you could just banner to Lannister and use Tyrion and Jaime and be like, haha.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wait, no, you have to control a participating Night's Watch character.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. This will be good, but I don't think it is yet.
Yeah, I think it will get very good. Like, it feels like Night's Watch has a lot of those ancillary tools to be some kind of interesting control deck, but it doesn't have, like, the key pieces yet.
Well, like, winning by 5 or more seems almost impossible in defense on Night's Watch. But, like, in Tyrell, winning by 5 or more is easy.
So Night's Watch, like, Tyrell?
No, it just, well, no, because you still have to sing Night's Watch characters, so that doesn't work. But, like, just because it works in Tyrell means it could potentially work in Night's Watch if they release those cards.
Don't a lot of Tyrell's pumps work on any character, though?
Yeah, like Marjorie does, for sure.
Just Marjorie, I think.
Yeah.
The sword can only go on Tyrell characters, and the event is only Tyrell characters, unless I'm missing something.
Growing strong in my ass.
Well, the Tyrells are growing strong, just the Night's Watch growing strong off Tyrell's back.
Legit.
I think it's a C+ that'll go up.
Yeah, I think that's fairly reasonable. With a slight caveat,
I
think,
put it.
Yeah, I will say I think it is also probably slightly better in melee, even though it only affects that one opponent and only their attacks. Like, in melee, you really don't want to waste challenges, and the chance that the Night's Watch player defends and pulls this on you, I think, is kind of an issue. I don't know. You can still initiate them against other people.
I wouldn't anyway. Like, and the Night's Watch player pulls this, they've had to overcommit to one challenge, so they're just going to be sitting ducks for everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. The more I walk through that scenario, the less I like it. Fair enough.
Yep. So, well, boring finish there.
Yeah, there's Night's Watch. Doesn't really end on a high note, I guess.
I mean, there. It's very, like, shit card, shit card, awesome card, shit card, shit card, awesome card.
Yeah.
What would we give the house as a rating?
Oh, not great. I think they're kind of in my bottom tier as a house at the moment.
AD, you know.
Oh,
you
for wanna, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a D-level house right now.
Yeah, yeah, very possibly. Although, looking at what we've seen so far from this first pack, it may push them up very quickly.
They certainly seem like the house to me that has the most foundations laid for the most amount of stuff outside of Targ. Like, there's a lot of things that you can build on. You've got Draw, you've got the defense theme, you've got the weenie theme, you've got just a bunch of stuff that you can do. It's
maybe
just all very
too
under
focus moment. Or too unfocused, sorry.
Yep, but Targ is playable now, even with all of their unfocused stuff. Night's Watch is all right. They're just all over the board, and when they do get fleshed out, they're going to be good. But for right now, I would agree. I would say they're a D house or faction.
Props and slops? Is that what I'm saying?
That's what you're saying.
All right. There we go. So I'm going to go ahead and throw out some props to start things out. I've got some props because I finally decided, you know, I was getting tired of podcasts and stuff while I run, and music just never kind of holds my attention quite well enough. So I went ahead and downloaded an audiobook and picked up one of the first new novels in the new Star Wars continuity, and I grabbed Aftermath. Started listening to that while I was out today. Pretty solid. I think a little better than some other audiobooks I've tried. It's almost an audio drama. It has sound effects. It has music, which is interesting. But unfortunately only has one guy reading all the parts. Now, he's doing a lot of different voices and stuff, which is pretty solid. But yeah, I don't know. Overall, I like it. As long as you don't mind all the Imperials sounding like Stewie, basically, because that's the kind of fake British accent that everyone has.
I am reading that book right now, actually. And
oh, nice.
I'm about halfway through.
Oh, you're much further than me. I'm in, like, chapter 2.
Okay, so you haven't had any interludes yet?
No, no. Prologue, and then somewhere in the middle of chapter 2.
So an interesting device that they use throughout the story is they have chapters, and then it'll be a batch of chapters, 3, 4, 5, something like that, and then they'll have this interlude, which is not related to the theme of the story at all, but just takes you somewhere totally unrelated to the story and gives you a pulse of what's going on in the galaxy at large kind of thing.
Huh.
And, you know, the first one, it was kind of weird, and you're just like, I don't understand why you're going away from the action to give this, but then once you see it all start building together, it's really kind of an interesting way to set the scene and world build, for lack of a better term, given that no one has any idea what the state of the galaxy is in this time period.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, and so they haven't quite done that, though. Even just where I am so far, it is kind of funny how much they're like just kind of beating us over the head, like kind of setting things up like, oh no, the stuff that you're used to at this point isn't quite true. Let me spell X, Y, and Z out.
Yeah, I know the book's taken a lot of heat in terms of reviews because there are a lot of upset people that it's not staying true to the expanded universe that existed in the previous novelizations and that kind of thing, but I mean, if you take it for what it is, I think it's pretty decent. I mean, yeah. No one was going to be thrilled with the first book that came out in the canon for adults after Return of the Jedi. And so it was a hard thing to tackle, but I think the guy did a decent job.
Yeah.
So I want to slap the Emmys. Because did you guys watch this season of Game of Thrones?
I did.
Is there any real argument that this is the worst season so far?
It's pretty damn.
I don't think so.
So this is the season that won every Emmy. Mm-hmm. And now I don't trust their taste. Oh, yeah, and they refused to give an Emmy to Amy Poehler. And Amy Poehler deserves all the Emmys.
She's pretty hilarious.
The one season without Charles Dance, and then he got them winning.
That's actually pretty crazy, considering he was definitely one of the highlights.
Oh, and the worst Tyrion season. Wait, yeah, the worst Tyrion season, and he won the award.
Yeah.
Like, he was a monster last year. He was so good. And this year, he's like, yeah, Emmy.
I'm fine with them giving him awards, but it still doesn't quell any of my anger about Tywin, but whatever.
And he spent the season being a drunk and doing nothing. Like, he didn't really arrive till the last episode.
So, anybody got anything else? That's pretty much it for me.
Props to National Car Rental. I'm on a business trip this week, and I'm a member of the Emerald Club for that, and so I get to walk down the aisle and pick my own car. And so when I landed, walked down three cars into the row, there's a black Dodge Challenger, the trunk open, so that's my car for the week, and that is a pretty fun rental car to drive.
Well, props to you for being on the podcast while you're on this trip. Just want to throw that
out. Oh, yeah. Commitment, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Do what I can.
And that closes another chapter of The White Book.